Pascha Shavuot Tov. I hope Slichus was meaningful for you. We started. How are you, David? Okay. We started last week the sugya of Psulei Lulav. So, if you're looking at Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, at the very bottom of the Amud. Yeah. You need a Gemara, dude?
I have.
You manage? Okay.
So which staff did you say?
Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, all the way in the bottom.
Yeah.
And we had a statement of Rav Huna. Rav Huna said that there's a limitation to the psul of Niktam Rosho, and that only applies Niktam, where the entire top of the lulav was broken off. It's severed from the lulav. I will nistak if the top of the lulav was split kosher. Rashi says nistak nistaku roshe ha'olin. So we're talking about the top leaves and the top part of the leaves of the lulav, and they were split and it's kosher. The Gemara actually questions Rav Huna from a Braisa, because the Braisa has a long list of psulei lulav, and the third case in this long list is called saduk, which means that the lulav is split, and that presents a problem. So the Gemara is going to have to say in the name of Rav Papa that the case in the Braisa where the lulav saduk is posel is the Avi Kehimnak. And this case of Kehimnak is a more extreme case of Saduk. Rashi explains that if it's Kehimnak, it seems like it has Shtei Shidros. There's something, in a sense, that's deformed or unusual about this lulav, and it doesn't look exactly like a classical lulav, and therefore it's possible. Rashi says that kach gadol halulav, this is the way the lulav grows, kimin shtei shidros, and it has two spines, and the leaves of one spine are on the right side, the right spine, and the leaves on the left, and there's no one single spine that has olive mikan umikan. That's the extreme case of saduk, where the split goes all the way down through the shidra in such a way that it looks like two shidros. Okay. That's what we have there. Now, what we got up to last time was Omar of Papa. Rav Papa says, Nifritzu di Ovid ki Chufya. When the Mishnah says that the leaves were taken off, they were severed from the lulav, from the spine of the lulav, then Ovid ki Chufya, what he did was he tried to tie together the leaves of the lulav and attach them artificially to the spine of the lulav, as opposed to Nifridu, where the Mishnah says it's kosher, because there the leaves of the lulav were separated but not totally severed from the shidra. So they're still hanging on to the shidra. And in this context, we're going to have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda is going to require that in the case of Nifridu, you tie together the leaves of the olim of the shidra that are falling off. And why would Rabbi Yehuda require tying them together and binding them to the shidra? Anybody remember?
Agad?
No, even without the principle of Agad.
Kofus,
exactly. Because he requires kofus, meaning not the way we read it, kapos tomorrow, but he reads it kofus, which means that the olim have to be absolutely bound to the shidra. The Chacham, on the other hand, say that even though kofus requires that you bind it together, you don't have to actually do the binding. It has to be suitable for binding. It has to be royal of binding. As opposed to a case where it's so severed or it became so brittle that if you start binding it, it's going to break off. That's the case that's possible. And now we're up to Boy Rav Papa. So let's make sure that everybody has the place, because that's really where we want to focus our attention today.
I'm lost, I think. Lamed Bet
Aleph? Lamed Bet Omed Aleph, yeah.
Lamed Bet.
Lamed Bet Omed Aleph. So Boy Rav Papa, again, we're going to have to study this suffix of Rav Papa in depth. I'm just right now, just to get us, you know, get us rolling for the new week. I'm just going to read it on a very simple, superficial level. Rav Papa has a suffix in the case of Nechlika Hatiomes, and Rashi identifies the Tiomes as two parts of one leaf. In other words, the leaf itself is made up of two halves that are midubakim, that are attached like Siamese twins. And now he splits these two halves, so to speak, of the leaf, so that they're no longer midubakim. They're no longer connected to each other as ta'omen. We're going to have to get, you know, come to grips with this suffix of Rav Papa in the context of Rav Huna that we just started with, because Rav Huna seems to assume that if it's saduk, it's kosher. And yet Rav Papa might be thinking that it's pasul. So can we reconcile Rav Huna's saduk with Rav Papa's nechlika tiomes? Meaning, maybe the case of Rav Huna is not a case of tiomes at all. Although it's a little bit difficult because Rashi identifies Nistak in Rav Huna as Rashi Ha'olim. And the Rashi Ha'olim on the top part of the Lulav include also the Tiyomis. So we'll get to that in Mirtz Hashem a little bit later on. What I want to focus your attention on today, before we get to Tiyomis, is the word Charus. Now this word Charus appears on the top of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, in the list enumerated by the Brice of Psule Lulav. And it's the last word on the top line of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. And it says, Charus, Pasul. Amongst the various categories of Psule Lulav, one of them is called Charus. And we did not get a chance to discuss what this Charus is and why it's Pasul. So obviously our first address is going to be Rashi. But the plot grows thicker because in this case, not only does Rashi try to interpret Charus, but the Gemara itself seems to address Charus. So for example, if you fast forward to the Gemara that starts with Omer le Ravina le Rav Ashi, and Ravina turns to Rav Ashi. Now again, I'm going to need you to underline this so we'll be able to go back and forth, because Charus is on the top line of the Gemara, but it also appears a second time in the discussion between Ravina and Rav Ashi. So I just want to know, by a show of hands, can you show me that you found Amalei Ravina le Rav Ashi? It's about two-thirds down on the page. Okay, so we have two. Oh, we got three, so we're in the majority.
I'm looking.
Amalei Ravina le Rav Ashi. Is there a shortcut for telling you where that is? I can start counting lines.
It's across from the Rashi of Tiomos.
Okay, if that helps anybody, it's across from the Rashi of Tiomos.
Okay.
Amalei Ravina le Rav Ashi. Now, Ravina, in his discussion with Rav Ashi, belongs to a slightly different sugya, but we're going to see an overlap with our sugya. He's not talking specifically about psule lulav, about lulav that experienced some sort of an injury, you know, or it was split, or it was broken, or the leaves were separated. He's talking about the Torah itself. What does the Torah mean by kapos tmarim? It doesn't specify a lulav. But When Ravina suggests a substitute candidate for kapos tmara, meaning to substitute for a lulav, he's going to actually mention the case of charus, which is listed, as we saw on the top of this omud, as one of the psule lulav. And it's going to be a little bit strange because it's almost like the Gemara is moving backwards here instead of forwards. You have the Braisa that lists Charus as one of the Psu'e Lulav, which sounds like you're talking about an incident, you know, I call it an injury that happened to the Lulav. And then Ravina turns to Ravashi and he says, Mimai dahai kapos tmarim lulavahu. How do you know which birdie whispered in your ear that the words kapos tmarim refer to a lulav? Doesn't say lulav in the pasuk. I have a different entity which could substitute for a lulav. Ema charusa. Maybe it's a charusa. Now it would seem to me, and again we'll have to see if I'm right, that charus and charusa are identical terms, just that in Aramaic we often add an aleph at the end of a Hebrew word. So if I'm right, what's going on here, and that's why I say it's a little bit odd, is that we already have a psul of lulav, which is called charus, and now Ravina says to Ravashi that this charus exists in nature, we'll call it a charusa, and it might be a substitute for a lulav. And we're going to have to figure out why Ravina thinks it could fit into the shoe or fit the description of the Torah of Kapos tomorrow. And in order to do that, we're going to have to try to figure out what Charusa is. And at the same time, our goal, and it's a pretty high goal, is that on the one hand, Charusa is something that developed on the tree, meaning let me explain what I mean. That wasn't a good use of terms. What I meant to say, it happened, so to speak. In other words, there's something terrible, so to speak, happened to the lulav. And on the other hand, we're talking not about something terrible that happened to the lulav, but we're talking about something, a phenomenon in nature that could qualify, according to Ravina's logic, as kapos tmarim, as a substitute for the lulav.
Why say substitute? You're saying it is the lulav.
I mean to say substitute for our definition of a lulav. So our definition of kapos tmarim is lulav, and Ravina says, no, it's a charusa. Again, he doesn't mean to say that he actually believes it's a charusa. So we have a Kabbalah which was passed on from Moshe Rabbeinu and on that a lula, that the kapos tmarim is a lula. But what Ravina wants to know is, well, the Torah used the term kapos tmarim, and if we have a Kabbalah that a kapos tmarim is a lula, in Yiddish we say hushtekos. Where does it say that? The pasuk doesn't say it's a lula. In fact, the pasuk could be equally interpreted as charusa. But Dr. Joel, I'm wondering if I've conveyed my if you can empathize with my problem here. My problem is that the Braisa lists all sorts of psulim. You know, let's go through them. You have a case of Akum where he sort of bent the lulav out of shape. You have a case of Kafuf. You have a case of Nistak, where he split the top of the lulav. These are all occurrences that pass in the lulav. One of them is called charusa, or charus in the language of the Braisa. Now, if charus is the same as charusa, a charusa, then it's very odd because Ravina seems to be saying, I found something in nature which is a kapos tmarim, even though it's not a lulav, and that's called charusa. That same charusa was already listed earlier on this daf in the Braisa as one of the cases where, boom, something happened and it became possible. It could have been a great candidate as a lulav. It is a lulav, but it's a lulav ha-possible. Whereas Ravina is saying that a charusa, and he doesn't know why, that's why he's arguing, he's fighting here, is not a lulav at all. It doesn't fit the description of kapos tmarim. He thinks it does. It should fit the description of kapos tmarim. So let's try to figure out what this entity called charus is. You know, now there are two Rashis here on the page. Rashi on the second line from the top is going to tell me what charus is in the Braisa. So you want to underline Rashi charus, second line on the daf. And then, just to give you a heads up, then we're going to try to compare that to Rashi Divrei Maskil Charusa, which again, if you want to underline it, if you own your own Gemara, you can underline it. And the word Charusa is about halfway down the daf. Everybody have that? There's a Rashi, Dibra Maskel Charusa. You know, what's nice about our Gemaras is that the Dibra Maskel Rashi is in bold print. When I was a youngster, we didn't have that. That's a later innovation. And therefore, when I was a youngster, you looked at Rashi, to find a specific Rashi was really a challenge. Today it's a lot easier because the Dibra Maskel jumps out at you. So it's a lot easier for a Rebbe to say to his students, look at this Rashi Dibra Maskel, because it's the eye can catch it. So that's Rashi Dibra Maskel Charusa. So to be honest with you, I don't know which Rashi I want to do first. I'll tell you why, because the second Rashi, even though it's later on the daf, is a little bit clearer to me. I get a little, because Rashi elaborates, in the top Rashi on Charus, he's very short-winded, very abridged. So again, what I'm going to do here is, I'm going to read the Rashi on the top of the Amud. I'm going to admit to you that Rashi is a little bit sketchy, he hasn't filled in all the details, and I'm going to try to argue that Ravina, when he asked Rav Ashi about Charusa, could Charusa possibly be a candidate as a substitute for Lulav, for Kapos Tmarim, Rashi now, for some reason, finds it necessary to elaborate a little bit more in detail about what this entity looks like.
In the Baraisa, at the top of the page, it uses Charus twice. First it says Charus Pasul, and then immediately it says Dudma La Charus Kasha.
Right.
So
Rashi's going to say
right
that
there.
It's on its way to becoming a Charus, but it's not yet a Charus. So if it's a full-fledged charus, you know, the capital ches, then it's possible. But if it's domel charus, meaning it's on the way to becoming charus, then it's kosher. So charus is an extreme, and you have to reach that extreme in order to be possible. If you're a little bit shy of that extreme, that's called domel charus. So Rashi says charus is kosher. Shenase chorios. Now chorios, you may remember, are those parts of a palm day tree that never grow leaves. You'll see them on the trunk of the tree, which is called in Hebrew the geza. And I think we've circulated a picture of this in the past. In fact, the trunk of the tree in the case of a lulav looks very different than in the case of a canary tree. And there's a whole debate about whether a canary tree, one of the various simanim that you can tell the difference between a classical lulav tree and a canary tree is in this chorios, is in the geza on the bottom. You know, the lulav tree has a geza on the bottom that's much taller, whereas the canary tree has these stumps on the bottom, small stumps. But what's common to both of them is that this part of the trunk of the tree is simply a piece of dry wood, as you'll see, and it doesn't have leaves growing out of it. So Rashi's saying that at some point the lulav itself, nase chorios, it becomes like the trunk of the tree. So the lulav becomes like the trunk of the tree. How is that so? Because we said that the trunk of the tree has no what? No leaves on it. It's pure wood. A vertical piece of wood. And charus, although it was a lulav once, it became a vertical piece of wood. Rashi says, nasa eitz. I'm fast-forwarding to the last two words of Rashi, and then we'll fill in the middle. But the goal of Rashi is to convince us that the word charus, even though it describes something that's much higher up on the palm day tree, it's not on the bottom like the trunk, nevertheless you can call it charus because it has the same properties, the same description as the charios on the bottom. So it's interesting, you know, the difference between the trunk of the tree, the charios, and the bulk of the lulav tree, the growth of the lulav tree is so fundamental. But at some point, Rashi is saying, the lulav tree itself becomes charios. And that's why it's called charus. Now, how did this happen? So Rashi says that the charus on the bottom, the charios, have no leaves on them. There's a point in which the lulav itself has no leaves. And Rashi says that the word charus means kasha, hardened. Leaves always apparently indicate some sort of moisture. Shenase charios, And she says shekein derech halulav. He says a lulav tree with the passage of time will become charyos. And how is that so? He says noshrim olav. Excuse me, olav. Its leaves noshrim. They fall off. Bimos hagishom, during the winter months. I'm assuming he means the cold winter months dry up the lulav tree. And the lulav tree itself becomes charyos. It becomes totally leafless, olaless, olav no shrim, and they fall off. And what are you left with? Once you have divested, if you could use that word, you've stripped the lulav tree of its olim, because the olim fell out, they fell off, then you're left with shidra. You're left with basically what used to be the spine from which the olim came out, but now there are no olim because they all fall down. You know, Humpty Dumpty, they all fell down. Now you're left with a shidra. And Rashi says that hashidra miskasha, the shidra now that has no olim to it, also gets dried up. The nasa eitz. And basically the shidra itself, the spine, becomes like the trunk of the tree, which is pure wood, that's totally dry and has no olim to it. But I think Rashi, Divra Maskel Harusa, amplifies this. He fills in a little bit more of the botanical background to this phenomenon, that the lulav itself becomes like the charyos, and if we call it charus. So I'm assuming you have the Rashi, Harusa. Rashi says, Anaf hadekel, the branches or the branch of the date tree. So again, we're past the trunk of the tree. We're now on to the branches. Now, what's going to come out of the branches of a tree, of any tree, and certainly in the case of a date tree of the lulav tree,
leaves.
Correct. The leaves are supposed to come out. But Rashi says, the branches from which the leaves come out, mishenis kasha, they become very hard. And I'm assuming again that Rashi is referring to Yemos HaKishomim, during the winter, cold winter days. Shtei shanim v'sholosh, and this happens year after year, for 2-3 years. And v'yotzim bo lulavim harbe, he says that with each additional year, new lulavim are going to be produced, are going to grow to replace the lulavim of last year. Because what happened to the lulavim of last year? Shenoshru aleihem, that the leaves fell off. So now we have in the second year, in the third year, new lulavim to replace the original olim that came out of these branches that dried up. So it's in a sense it's an entity that's, what word can I use, that's jumping back. I don't know, I'm looking for a phrase, but it's now in the second round, like in a boxing match. What would you say if you almost got TKO'd in the first round, but now you
rejuvenate?
Okay, that's a good word. So the lulav is trying to self rejuvenate this date tree, because on the first year, the olive became very hard and they fell off, nashru aleihem. But now the lulavim that replaced the leaves that dried up and fell off is niskashu gam heim. They too became dry. Vinasu eitz. So now what you have is the olim on the one hand fell off. They were replaced by lulavim. The lulavim became dry. So what are you left with now?
I'm lost. Now aren't I'm confused between the
olim and lulavim. Right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit confusing. Rashi doesn't.
I thought it's the leaves come back on the sidra and then they dry up before the.
Oh, so but Rashi wants to point out that there's a two stage process, so to speak, or maybe three stage, because it happens in 2 years or in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So in the first year, Rashi has that from the branches of the dekel tree, lulavim come out. Now, these lulavim, in a sense, are like mini shidros, if you follow what I mean. Right? What is a lulav? A lulav, we always said, is A plus B. It's a shidra, and it has olim to it. That's the total entity is a lulav. So Rashi says that anaf hadekel shen is kasha. So what was the situation of this anaf hadekel in the first round, when it was perfectly healthy, before it suffered a very severe winter? I'm just dramatizing it. It was Yotzim Bo Lulovim Harbe. There were many Lulovim that are made up of Shidros. So the Shidros are coming out of this Anaf. You have like a branch, and then you have many, many different spines that come that shoot out from the branch. The spines themselves grow or produce Lulovim, meaning it's not just pure spine, but it's spine together with all and with the leaves. Then what happens is that these lulavim fall off the tree. So what do you have after they fall off the tree? You're left with many different spines, who each of which has dropped its leaves. So it's like you have a bunch of lulavim, but you can't call them lulavim now in the technical sense, because they have no olim to it, to them. Viniskashu gam heim. Now all these shidros that are left coming out of the branch, they also dried up. Vinasu eitz. So zepone lekan, zepone lekan. It's almost like you have an anaf, a branch, and now you have branches coming out of the branch. You have branches coming out of the main branch. Those branches in the original life of the day tree of the dekel were lulavim. Correct? Yeah. But the lulavim lost their leaves, and then what you're left with is the spines and a whole bunch of spines, and the spines are leafless spines. So the spines themselves became dry. So it's really an interesting thing now, because what's happening is, if I understand Rashi correctly, that the branch itself now could become, and this is going to be Ravina's question, a lulav, because coming out of the branches you have many different shidros, you have different spines. Now, the spines themselves have no olim on them. So like if I would cut down one spine and want to use it as my lulav, that would clearly be possible. Why?
No leaves.
There are no leaves on it. And we know from the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek, nifritzu olav is possible. Right? Nifritzu, we said, means that the leaves were separated from the spine. But paradoxically, the Gemara thinks, Ravina thinks, that could still be a lulav. Now you ask me a question, how could it still be a lulav if it has no olim to it? If noshu olav, then where's your lulav?
The branch itself?
Exactly, the branch itself could become a lulav. Why? Because the branch itself has now many shidros that came out of it. So again, if I'm reading this Rashi correctly, there's a whole new picture here that's being painted in front of our eyes. We're talking about an anaf. The anaf, which is a major branch of this lulav tree, has many lulavim. The problem is that those lulavim lose their leaves. Now, once they lose their leaves, each one of these lulavim are clearly possible because of nifritzu olav, if you want to call it that. But the paradox here of Ravina is that now the original anaf could serve as a lulav. Because in a sense, all these shidros that used to be lulavim, each one of them, and are no longer lulav because they lost their olim, each of them could be considered the olim of the anaf. And therefore the anaf itself, if you cut it down, has the propensity of kapos tmarim. What do I mean by kapos tmarim? If kapos tmarim means that there are various shoots that come out of this anaf of a dekel tree, correct? So they now represent kapos tmarim. And the only reason the Gemara rejects this is because, let's see, the Gemara, omalei ravina l'ravashim, imai da'ai kofis tmarim, kapos tmarim de lulavahu, ema charusa. And the Gemara answers two words here, be'inon kofus. Be'inon kofus means that if you have leaves that are attached to a shidra, then you have kofus. Kofus means that the leaves are bound, so to speak, in nature they're bound, and if they're not bound in nature, then you can artificially bind them to the to the Lulav. But now the Olam fell off of the Lulav. But the answer is that now each Lulav becomes a Shidra for the Anaf. And therefore that can be a Lulav. The Gemara says no. Because since each one of these Shidros is dry, like a piece of wood, it can no longer be subject to kafus. There's no way that you can take these shidros and attach them to the anaf, and therefore it's possible.
But aren't they part and parcel of the anaf? Aren't they? They're going out of the anaf.
So but they're not kafus. There's no way you can attach them to the, you know, to the shidra. In other words, now you have many shidros coming out of one major shidra. But the problem with those shidros is, there's no way that they can become kafus and they can be bound to the one anaf. And it's fascinating why this one anaf is called charus, because charus, as I said before, is the trunk of the tree that, in the case of a lulav tree, climbs a little distance high, and it's a totally dried up piece of wood, has no anaf into it. But the Gemara considers that this anaf that has shidros coming out of it is basically identical to charus, even though it's not located at the trunk of the tree, but it's identical to the charus in the sense that it is wood without leaves. And the Gemara thinks that who says that this should be possible? The Torah says kapos tamarim, and you know, if you don't change the word kapos to mean kofus, but kapos means sort of like hands, so to speak, that shoot out of the anaf. So now forget about the olim. Who says I have to have olim? If the olim fell off of the various lulavim in the first year, now they were replaced by other lulavim, and those other lulavim now are coming out of this main anaf. They too have a problem because the olam are going to fall off. But who cares if the olam fall off? Says Ravina, why can't I consider the anaf itself as a lulav that has many different shidros that are coming out of it? And Gemara says, because we're going to reread the word kapos as if it said what? Kofus. And there's no way that you can accomplish kofus with these various shidros.
Wouldn't it be impractical to try and take the shape of a tree? Or wouldn't it be... too heavy and big enough?
No, we're going to cut off the anaf.
Yeah.
Right? And from these anaf, there are various shidros, and the anaf itself will be considered a lulav. Now, again, you and I are imagining in our mind that this is a massive piece of branch, and that these shidros are who knows how long. But the truth is, it doesn't have to be so massive. All it has to be is four tefachim. If I can get one anaf, you know, again, there are various anafim and there are various lulavim coming out. All I need is to get one anaf that's four tefachim high and it has these shidros coming out of them. They've absolutely dried up, but who cares? I don't need an olim. There's no xeris akasa that you need olim. The shidros themselves now, insofar as they are offshoots from this anaf, they could be considered like a substitute for the anafim. I'm sorry, as a substitute for the olim, I meant to say. And if not for the pasuk chafus, meaning reading it in that way, this would be an excellent candidate for a lulav. I don't mean a lulav because it's not a lulav. A lulav has to have olim. We have no olim here. But it would be a candidate for kapos tomorrow.
Biologically, the spines, do they grow new leaves next year or all new? Grow again.
It's hard to say because Rashi starts this whole picture, this whole presentation with Shtayim or Shalosh Shonim. So I don't know what happens after the third year. Does this keep going on? I can't take a clue.
But in year one they dry up and you just have Shidro or the Anaf.
Right.
Year two, do the Shidro grow new leaves?
Yeah, it seems like Rashi is Shtayim or Shalosh Shonim. That maybe in the third year. So again, I don't know exactly when you cut down, you know, it's Erev Sukkos.
Right.
You know, at what year are you up to here? If you're up to year two, for example, or for that matter year three, if it again replenishes itself in year three, rejuvenates, that was your word. But we passed the winter months. So we passed the winter months, the lulavim lost, they shed their olim, you're left with shidros. So I don't care whether it's the second year or the third year, and I don't know if this process keeps going on, but the problem is that in that particular area where you want to fulfill your mitzvah, it's already past the winter, and you're at the point where these shidros are no longer producing olive. Again, in and of itself, that wouldn't be a problem according to Ravina, but we add the element of kafus into the equation, and that we don't have. So it's very, to me, it's very fascinating. I never realized this, but if our pshat in the sugya is correct, if we're reading Rashi correctly, then there's no gzeiras hakasuv that a lulav has to have olim. What the issue is going to be is that when the olim fall off, and you're left with a shidro without olim, vis-a-vis the anaf, those shidros might possibly substitute for olim in order to create the kapos tmarim, but the problem is that they're very dried up. And since these shidros are very dried up, there's no way that they're not pliable enough to bend them and bind them together with the main anaf. So what you're left with is a lack and deficiency of kafos.
I don't want to harm you. If you want me to stop, we'll talk to you about it. But if Sukkot is before winter, so
well, and that's why I mentioned the different parts of the world, and you know, you'd have to know what the conditions is. If you are able to chapa rain, so to speak, a period of time at Sukkot in your area where the lulavim, I shouldn't say lulavim, I should say the shidros, are pliable enough that they're still moist, so that you can actually do kafus, then elchinami would be that would be a lulav. Right. Because maybe you wouldn't call it a lulav, but you would call it what the Gemara calls domel charus. Let's go back to the second line on the top. When the brisa says charus, that charus is totally dried up in such a way that there's no possibility of what? Kafus. But let's say it didn't totally dry up, then maybe there is a possibility of kofus. Rashi says, Hiskil is kashos, line 4, v'adayin lo nasa eitz. Now, what does Rashi mean when he says adayin lo nasa eitz? I think what Rashi means is that there's still a possibility of kofus. There's enough pliability because of whatever minimum amount of moisture is left in the shidros that it could possibly be kofus. Now it's interesting that in Rashi Dibra Meskel Charus, although he doesn't go through the whole spiel, but he does give you the impression, A, that the Olav Noshrim, and B, what is the problem of dryness here? It's in the Shidra. Now, here in the later Rashi, he's telling us more than that, that with each year, additionally, you have new lulavim coming out that are losing with the winter time, they lose their olim, and therefore Rashi is saying that it's pona lakan lakan. Rashi is dealing with a multitude of shidros. He's not dealing with one shidra. In the first Rashi, he seems to be assuming that there's only one shidra. So there is definitely a difference between the first Rashi and the Brisa and the sugya of Ravina. But I think that fundamentally, in terms of the conceptual idea of what is kapos tmarim, both Rashis are saying the same, that what you're left with is a shidra, which is totally devoid of its olim, and therefore it's so dry that the shidra itself cannot be flexible. You know, you can't use that shidra as an addendum or an offshoot of the anaf of the lulav tree, of the date tree, in such a way that it becomes kapos tmarim. And the reason for that is since it became eitz, it's not subject to kofus. If it didn't become eitz yet, it's the dry development has not reached its fruition, its totality, then enochinami, it would be kosher because it would be kapos tmarim and it could be kofus. Now, it seems to me that Rashi here was bothered by a question. And we've already hinted at this, but I want to repeat it and spell it out. If Rashi assumes, and he repeats himself twice, that because of the winter, the harsh winter, the olim of the lulav fall off, And Rashi says it twice. Let's see it. Rashi says, Olav, this is the last word in the second line from the top. Rashi says, Olav noshrim bimos hagshavim, which literally means that the leaves fall off of the lulav. Rashi repeats himself in Charusa, and he says, shenoshru alehem. So you put the two Rashis together, he's again repeating that the olim fell off the shidra. And now Rashi has a problem, because if the olim fell off the shidra, then why does the Braisa have to dramatize this psul? The Mishnah already told us that nifritzu olav pasul, that once the olim separate themselves from the lulav is pasul. So if Rashi is saying nashru olav, then that's the psul of nifritzu olav. Why did the Braisa feel compelled? The every single case in the Braisa, which is enumerated as a psul lulav, is a chiddush, is something that we didn't have in the Mishnah. For example, we have kafuf, where the top of the lulav bends over. We have kavutz, which we said was, there are uktzin, there are very, I don't want to say dangerous, but there are very harmful thorns that come out of the spine. This is not mentioned in the Mishnah. We have akum, where the lulav is bent over. All these cases are added to the Mishnah. The Mishnah just mentions nifritzu olav or niktam rosho. Those are the only two categories that are listed in the Mishnah. But now the Braisa is adding the case of charus. Well, that doesn't add a thing. That's just a repetition of what we have in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says that nifritzu olav, and Rashi says no shem olav in the winter months, that the lulav tree sheds its leaves. That's exactly the case of nifritzu olav. So I think that the Beis Yosef is bothered by this. Let me read to you the Beis Yosef. If you want to make a note of it, if Yechiel was here, he would take a picture of it, but anybody is certainly free to borrow this and photocopy it. The language of the Beis Yosef is the following. After the Torah says Shah Be'ilon, the lulav was left on the tree, Ad Sheniskasha Ke'etz, he says the following. Nira, this is the language of the Beis Yosef. Dahainu Ditanya Hasam Charus Pasul. That the Tur, when he quotes this case of a psul lulav because it was left too long and niskashe ke'etz, he, the Tur, says the Beis Yosef, is basing himself on our brice of Charus Pasul. Pirish Rashi Charus Kasha Shanasa Charios Shekein Derech Alulav Olav Noshrim Bimos Hagshavim Vashidra Miskasha Vinasa Eitz. The Nire, it seems to me, says the Beis Yosef, Sherabenu, he's referring to the Tur, Mefaresh, he has a pirish on Rashi, meaning he's interpreting Rashi's commentary. The pirish Rashi Sha'olav Noshrim Bimos Hagshavim Lo Noshrim Legamre, they didn't actually fall completely, Mimokom Chiburam, and they detach themselves from the place where they are attached, be ikram meaning at the base. The ain darko shalula bakach. So first of all, he's claiming that it's impossible to take Rashi literally, that the olim fell off the tree, because that doesn't exist in nature. So for that, we'd have to take a field trip or Google or I don't know what, and see who's right here. But again, what's motivating the Beis Yosef to interpret the Tur, to in turn interpret Rashi, that notion doesn't mean that really as you think it means that these olim fell off the tree, because that's not true. Elahainu lomar sha'olim mispardim mimenu, the olim separate themselves from the shidra, right? And therefore, at this point, what's the status of the lulav? If they separate themselves, but they're still attached? I need an answer. Either kosher or pasul. Those are your two choices. Kosher. Oh. Ella, but what's the problem? Even though Odenim Mechubarim Be'ikram L'Shidra, they're still attached to the Shidra, these all. Nevertheless, El B'Mako Chiburam, the point at which the Olim attached to the Shidra, Miskasha Ke'etz, they become very hard as a result of this drying process. Achi Efshal L'Chaber Ha'olim El Aguf. Afilu B'Yadayim. Even if you were to artificially try to push the Olim against the Guf, you can't do so. They're simply, you know, like a 90 degree angle, so to speak. Shekachu derech halulav. And that's something that exists in nature. So again, according to the interpretation of the Beis Yosef, and he's filling in a lot of material here that we don't find in the Tur, he's saying, is going to reinterpret Rashi. When Rashi says no shema olam, he doesn't mean it literally that the olam fell off. He means that the olam have separated from the Shidra, but in the Makom Chibur, where they're attached, it's impossible to attach the Olim to the Guf HaLulav, to the Shidra, the Lulav, because of the fact that they became dry Ke'etz.
They would probably break off if you tried.
Exactly, they would break off. That's how brittle they are. The Kachu Derech HaLulav, and now I'm saying this is what you're going to find when you Google how does a Lulav grow, or how does a date tree grow its Lulavim. Since the only chibur to the shidra is at the base, but not li'arkam, for the length of the leaf, therefore currently no shrim. That's why Rashi finds literary license to use the word no shrim. So no shrim in Rashi doesn't mean detached, but it means the impossibility of kafus, of binding the lulavim li'arkam, meaning the olim li'arkam. It's only bound to the lulav, to the shidra, at the base of the shidra, which is called ikar makom chibura. Now, I think what we can add here to the Beis Yosef, to clarify it, as to why the Tur reinterprets Rashi, and the word noshrim ha'olim doesn't mean literally that they fell off the shidra, says the Beis Yosef, because that doesn't happen in nature. But maybe we could just add another element here to the equation, that Rashi, according to the Beis Yosef, was bothered. Why does the Bryce have to add this case of charus if the olim actually fell off the shidra? That's called nifritzu olim. Then that's for sure possible. And yet Rashi is trying to describe a phenomenon in nature where the olim fell off. If they fell off, what difference does it make if I break them off and there are no olim on the shidra, or the olim separate themselves, completely detached from the shidra as a result of the cold, bitter winter? The answer is that Rashi shouldn't be taken literally. Rashi doesn't mean no shrim, that they were detached. That would be nifritzu olim. The Bryce would not be telling me any chidushim, but rather still attached, but they don't lend themselves to kafus, because be'ikar makom chiburam niskashu ke'etz. And once it's niskashu ke'etz, there's no pliability whatsoever, no flexibility, and there's no possibility of kafus. Now, we are suggesting, and I think if you take a look at the Bach says the following. Let's see if I can find it. He says for Kavanoso, what Rashi has in mind, Lefaresh Charus Sha'olav Noshrim Mina Shidros. And if I read the Bach correctly, he's not willing to reinterpret Rashi as if to say that Noshrim in Rashi doesn't really mean what you think it means, what you and I think it means, that they fell completely off of the Shidra, because that again is an old psul that's listed in the Mishnah explicitly of Nifritzu Olav. Why would the Bryce have to add that as a list, to his list of psulim? It's just a repetition of what we have in the Mishnah. And that was the problem that motivated the Beis Yosef to reinterpret the Rashi and saying that Charis is not a case where it was detached, but it's still hanging in there, but it lacks the possibility of Charis. And the Bach is not willing to say that, because he says Kavanoso Kan Lefarish Becharus De Olav Noshrim Min Ashidros. Oh, so the Bach says that what does Rashi mean Noshrim Min Ashidros? If it means literally that it fell and detached, he's not allowing any flexibility, pardon the pun here, in Rashi. In other words, you can't say that Rashi's Noshrim means that they're still attached with Makom Chiburim, because that's not called Noshrim. So why is this different than the case of Nifritzu Olav, if Rashi literally means Noshrim? So he says, because Noshrim Mikol HaShidros, you follow, he's introducing here the Sofek of Ravina, or shall I say the objection of Ravina, the question of Ravina. And Ravina is bothered by the following question. There are many Shidros over here. The Hamis Kashim, and they become very dry, and they shed all of their olim. But nevertheless, since there are many shidros, that itself should make it into a lulav. So you have the anaf, where the original lulav, meaning what grew originally were lulavim, those lulavim are no longer, but what you're left with is not lulavim, because lulavim always implies shidra plus olim. You're left with shidros. Okay, so the olim fell off these shidros, but let the shidros coming out of the anaf, that itself should be a lulav. That was Ravina's problem. And he says that there are shidros the emtza, meaning they're coming out of the anafba emtza, bein oson shemitzadidim ka'anfei shar ha'ilonos. Now we can see them as anafim, like in all ilonos. You have the main branch, and then you have the tributaries, the smaller branches that come out. However, he says ein ata yochel lechfoso, you cannot bend them so that it could be kofos. Now he's quoting the tour. He says, "Avol imshah ba'ilon achin niftach harbe klomish ashidros niskashu gam min atzdadim achin niftach harbe v'nasu ka'anfe ilon achas shekvar noshru kol ha'olim," and therefore it doesn't lend itself to kofos. So the Bach wants to assume that the tour also took Rashi literally. And when the Torah says Avolim Shah Be'ilon Achin Niftach Harbe, what he means is that the Olim fell off the lulav, they all fell off the combination of Shidra plus Olim, which we call the lulav. And then what you're left with is these various Shidros, Venis Kashu Venasu Keitz Upos. Again, I think what the Torah wants to explain is why the Braisa felt compelled to add Charos as a separate psul. Why not just apply the general psul of Nifritzu Olav, if Rashi is taken literally that the Olam fell off? But the answer is because now we have an Anaf with many Shidros, and Ravina, that's where the Torah is hinting at Ravina, that Ravina's Safek, or his question was that why can't the anaf with all the various shidros coming out of it serve as a description of kapos tmarim, and it could be kosher for a lulav? So again, how many different ole lulav were there on this tree?
That's been light to cover.
Because every year there's a whole new set of ole lulav. So you have the lulav, we'll call it, of year one. And the lulav means you have shidros coming out of this anaf which have olim on it. Mm-hmm. And then those fall off in the winter, but then you get to year two, and now again you have a set of ole lulav. And they fall off as well.
No.
It's all coming from the old shidros that come from the anaf. Okay. But now the shidros are shedding what I call shedding their olive. And as long as before they shed their olim, let's talk about the spring or the summer system. Then you have lulavim, literally lulavim coming out of this anaf, and the lulavim coming out of the anaf. Each one is kosher, but the problem is you didn't use that for sukkahs while it was a lulav, and every year waiting too long till you get from the spring into the winter. Again, you have to know in each country exactly what month that happens. At that point, there's no longer lulav. But when there's no longer lulav because it shed its olim, what are you left with?
Shidra.
And now when you have many shidros coming out of one anaf, then you, according to Ravina, that itself should be what? Should be a kapos tmarim for the mitzvah of kapos tmarim. The problem, says the Gemara, and that's what Rav Ashi answered to Ravina, is you don't read it as kapos tmarim, you read it as kofos. And once the various shidros become so hard because of the process of drying up, it becomes wood. So each one of those shidras is wood. You can cut it down and use it on Pesach, on Erev Pesach, for your bedika, for your Sreifas Chametz. That's wonderful. But if you want to use it Sukkot time, you have a problem because it's not what? It's not kofos. So just to summarize, What we've gained here is the following. Number one, we've answered up the following cash on Rashi. If it's all of Noshrim, why does the Brice have to add a new psul called Charus? L'chora, that's just a repetition of Nifritzu Olav. And we've also answered the following question, that why does Rashi use the word Noshrim if the Beis Yosef's interpretation based on the Torah is correct, that Noshrim doesn't mean it fell off? So why did Rashi use the word Noshrim? And we're answering both questions together, that notion means they did fall off. If they did fall off. So you're asking, isn't that Nifritzu Olav? The answer is, no, it's not Nifritzu Olav. Nifritzu Olav would be if you had one Shidra with its Olim, and then it's possible because the Olim fell out. But now you have a whole bunch of Shidros coming out of one Anaf. That makes the Anaf into Kapos tomorrow, even though all the Olim have fallen off. And that's where the Brisa says it's possible. Why? Because the Shidros became Koshim Ke'etz, and once they became so hard that there's no flexibility, no pliability here anymore, that you're not able to take these Kapos and attach them Kofus to the Anaf. And that's how dry it got, and therefore it's possible. And it can't be. So again, you know, there's no contradiction here between the first Rashi and the second Rashi. The second Rashi, he embellishes it by telling you the following, that not only in the case where you have one lulav, which with the winter it became so hard that it's not kofus, but you might ask, what about in nature? Isn't there a phenomenon where we can set up kapos tmarim even after the olam fell off? And the answer is that can't be kapos tmarim because it became so dried up that it's wood and it's not kofus. It doesn't lend itself to kofus. I'm just taking a minute to look at what I wrote and see if I left anything out here. Rashi. Now, it could be possible that Rashi on the top of the Amud in the Brisa, he's talking about Nifritzu Olav, meaning there's only one lulav and all its olam fell off, and Rashi's just giving you a description called Charus in nature, meaning you have the Nifritzu Olav where, let's say, through human intervention, the olim were ripped off or cut away from the shidra. But Rashi wants to tell you that if you're talking about milsa d'shchicha, you mean something that happens often. Nifritzu olav is kind of a once in a million kind of freak situation. But in nature itself, there's something that's the same psul as nifritzu olav in the way that the lulavim suffer through the winter and ultimately lose their olim. So in a chinami, that would be identical to the psul of Nifritzu Olav. And the reason why the Braisa mentions it as another category of psul is because the Braisa wants to call it a charus, which means I want to tell you that there's something in nature called a charus, where on an annual basis the lulavim lose their status of kosher lulavim, they become psul, because it's derech lekach, it's natural, and this is going to happen based on meteorological conditions on an annual basis, where the olim fall off naturally, not through human intervention. There was no great, you know, shake-up here where somebody, I don't know, threw the lulav and broke its olam off. The olam are going to fall off as part of nature, because the shidra becomes so hard that the olam are going to fall off. Then Rashi, the second Rashi, he's already addressing the issue of Ravina, and here he's talking not about one shidra, but about many shidros. And that's why Rashi goes through the whole shtei shanim o shalosh shanim, and he says that yotzim bo lulavim harbe, then nashu alehem, then iskashu. So Rashi is now talking about lulavim harbe. Do you see that? That's critical. You see, I didn't defend myself properly here. I let you guys get away with it, and either you were too tired because the slicha is to argue with me, or you didn't want to argue with me. You could have said to me, Berzon, who told you that Harusa is talking about many shidros? Why did you draw that conclusion? Why did you jump to that conclusion? In Harus, on the top of the page, Rashi doesn't mention many shidros. So my argument is, because look at Rashi, he says yotzin bo lulavim harbe. Why does Rashi add this lulavim harbe? Because Rashi wants to tell you that there are many, many lulavim, each of which lost its, right, respectively lost its leaves. And then what you're left with afterwards is what? What's a lulav without leaves? Shidra. Viniskashu gamem. Again, it's always in plural, because Rashi's emphasizing now that we have this phenomenon in nature of an anaf, which is the opening word in Rashi, that has many shidros. What do I mean by many shidros? Many lulavim that are no longer lulavim because they lost their olive. Viniskashu gamem, and now these shidros themselves became very dry. So dry they're like wood. Now, if you look at the anaf, you have all these shidros, zepona lekan, zepona lekan. And Rashi even compares it to many different trees. He says your classical tree has anafim, has many different branches, and each one of these branches has branches that come out of the branches. And that's basically what happens to your anaf in Rashi's description of Harusa, because the anaf now has many branches, each of which is a lulav, and each of which in its heyday could have been used for the mitzvah, but the problem is they were left on the tree too long, and now you have many lulavim coming from one anaf, and the anaf itself could serve as a lulav. That was the question that Ravina asked Ravashi. But the problem is that each one of these lulavim, which are left now as shidros, because you strip them of all their olim, each one of those shidros is dry as a potato, dry as a piece of wood. And therefore the Gemara says, be'inin kafus v'leka, there's no possibility of kafus. Now the Rambam completely omits the din of charus. And if we're right that the original Rashi of charus is talking about nifritu olav, just that Rashi wants to show you how in nature that phenomenon is common, then it makes sense that the Rambam would omit this, because the Rambam is not interested in giving you descriptions of nature. He's just telling you what's possible. So the Rambam has nifritu olav as possible. He doesn't have to repeat charus, because charus is basically identical with nifritu olav, because Rashi's noshrim ha'olim should be taken literally. And if the olim fall off, you have nifritzu olim. So the Rambam doesn't have to repeat this at all. Okay. But the only thing is, I need a Rambam, because the Rambam in nifritzu olim is a little bit strange. That's in Perek Ches Halacha Gimel. Again, I don't have the Rambam in front of me, so you'll have to trust me on this. You have it? Thank you so much. The Rambam says he's got Niktam Rosho, then he has Nistak, then he has Akum, goes through different scenarios of Akum, then he has Nifridu and Nifritsu. Now listen carefully. How does the Rambam differentiate between Nifridu, which is kosher, and Nifritsu, which is possible? The Rambam says Nifridu olav ze me'al ze v'lo nidaldalu ke'ole hacharios kosher. We'll come back to that in just a second. But Nifritsu olav ahu shi'idaldalu mishidro shalulav ke'ole charios possible. The Rambam introduces here a concept called Nidaldalu. And the Rambam says that the difference between Nifridu and Nifritsu is that whereas in the case of Nifridu, lo Nidaldalu, which we'll try to figure out, in Nifritsu, all of it's possible because Nidaldalu. And all this is to describe the relationship between the Olam and the Shidra. So the Rambam says, Nifridu, all of the olive would nifridu from the shidra, but lo nidaldalu, they didn't reach the level of nidaldalu, is then it's kosher. But in the case of nifritsu, it's nidaldalu. Not only were the olive separated from the shidra, but they got to the state of nidaldalu. That's a very radical, far-reaching state. And once it's nidaldalu, mishidra shalulav, and it's possible. And you have no, there's no doubt in our minds that the Rambam here is referring to our Braisa, because the Rambam says, how do you know whether it's Nidaldul and it's Posel, or it's Lo Nidaldul and it's Kosher? The Rambam says you have to compare it to Ole Charios. And Charios is our Sugiv Charusa. And the Rambam is telling you that Charusa, Charus, is such an extreme case that it's Nidaldulu Mishidro. So basically, on the one end, the good news is that the Rambam is equating Charus with Nifritsu Olav. And that's why the Rambam doesn't have to mention Charus as a separate category, because basically it's identical with Nifritsu Olav. However, what's the bad news is that the Rambam calls it Yidaldalu. What does the word Yidaldalu mean? See, if you were physicians in Hebrew, in Israel, you would know what Nidaldalu means. But it's a little bit gory. But Nidaldalu is when an organ or a limb of the body, I should say a limb of the body, forget about it, a limb of the body is still hanging on.
Dangling.
What's it called?
Just dangling.
Dangling, yeah. I guess you'd call it dangling, but it's still attached. So where Rashi says Nifritu means it's completely severed, Nebuch, He's talking, the Rambam, about Nidaldalu, so it's still hanging in there. So how bad is bad in the Rambam? Meaning how much of a radical bang did this lulav suffer? And the Rambam says Nifridu means even though the olam was separated, but it's not Nidaldalu. And if it's kosher, but if it gets to the point of Nidaldalu, then it's already possible. And the Rambam's criterion for this is the Charios that we spoke about. So it comes out that the Rambam is interpreting the word charus. Charus means a lulav shenidaldalu ha'olim min hashidra. What was the word you used, Dr. Joel, again? It was dangling? Yeah, so the olim are dangling from the shidra, but they're still attached. And the Rambam says, ponim klape mata. You know, if you had, let's say, a 90 degree angle, that's not considered nidaldalu, that's nifridu. Right? So here's your shidra. And now you have the olim that are on anywhere in between here and here. That's called nifridu, and then it's kosher. But then there's something nidaldalu. Nidaldalu means it's already, I guess you'd call it a larger than a 90 degree angle, and it's literally dangling from the shidra. And the Rambam holds that once it's ponim klape mata, it's already dangling so much, then it's possible. That's called charus in the language of the Braisa. So this Doma L'charis and this Charis. So Doma L'charis, according to the Rambam, is called Nifridu. But it's not dangling to such a radical extent. And then you get to the point of Charis Mamish, and the Rambam says Charis Mamish is Nidaldul to the point in which it's literally pointing towards the ground. You know what I'm saying? It's you know, until my cup runneth over. You know what I'm saying? It's It's flowing, so to speak, towards the ground on both sides. So the Rambam adds the word ke'ole charius. You know, he's alluding to our brisa of charius, and he's identifying the brisas of the brisa of charius with our mission of nifritzu olav, which is okay because the Rambam wants to show you that although the language of the brisa is different than the language of the Mishnah, but it's one category of psul. To such an extent that the Rambam omits charus as a separate category, includes it on the nifritzu. Do you see what the Rambam pulled off here? The Rambam pulled off what I call an integration. He integrated the brisa of charus with the Mishnah of nifritzu. That's a no-no. You know, I would have said the brisa l'chud and the Mishnah l'chud. But the Rambam is telling us that charus, which is nedaldalu Menashidra, it's no longer part of the Shidra, so to speak. It's even though it's still attached to the Shidra, is Rashi says Nasa Kharis. That becomes like a Kharis. Kharis
means it's hardened. Just because it's tangling doesn't mean it's hardened.
That's what I'm telling you. That the Rambam is learning that Kharis has nothing to do with hardening. Didn't come.
Love you.
Now I can. Okay. Of course, I got all my papers wet. Hopefully, I didn't get the yeshiva's tour wet. But anyway, you should never sneeze while you're holding on to it's cold tea, but anyway, it has the same thing. The Rambam doesn't have this whole story of Rashi, of Niskashu Ke'etz in the winter and it gets dry. Nowhere does that appear in the Rambam. The only remez, if you will, the only hint of charius, of this charus in the Rambam, is when he discusses the Mishnah of Nifridu and Nifritzu. And he says that Nifridu is kosher because it's not kibale charius, it shouldn't be equated with charus. And Nifritzu is possible because that's like charus. So he's using the Brisa to explain the difference between Nifridu and Nifritzu. Why is Nifridu kosher and Nifritzu possible? So the Rambam says, well, take a look at the Brisa. The Brisa says that if it's charus, it's possible. If it's kicharus, it's domel charus, then it's kosher. And the Rambam identifies kicharus. You know, if it's domel charus, Rambam calls it nifridu, and that's why it's kosher. If, on the other hand, it's charus, then it's possible, because then it becomes nifritzu. But the Rambam adds a few critical words here, and he says that in both cases, whether it's nifridu or nifritzu, there's a separation between the olim and the shidra. However, it's a question of quantity. You know, to what extent are the olim separated from the shidra? In the case of nifritu, it didn't get to the stage of nidaldalu kibale charios. It's not nidaldalu like a charos. What's a charos? A charos is nidaldalu. So we explain that charos means that it's so separated from the shidra that it's already turning towards the ground, if you follow my point. Now, is this a result of the natural process of drying or some other process? I don't know. The Rambam doesn't tell me that. And therefore, there's no need to, I think, you know, box the Rambam into any particular corner. But what we're gaining is two things here in the Rambam. Number one, I'm explaining why the Rambam omits charus. And the answer is he never omitted charus. Number two, we're saying that Rashi should be taken literally, that noshrim means it falls. The Rambam, on the other hand, says, no, there was no noshrim over here. Even in the case of nifritzu, there was no noshrim. It's still attached, albeit by the skin of its teeth, and it's nidaldalu. And then we're answering another question. What is the difference between the Mishnah and the Brisa? And we're saying, no, the Rambam is telling you there is no difference between the Mishnah and the Brisa. The Brisa has two cases. The Brisa has the case of charus and then domel charus. In the first, it's possible. In the second, it's kosher. That is exactly what the Mishnah differentiates between nifritzu and nifridu. Nifritzu is like charus, mamish. I should take out the word like, but it's charus mamish, right? Whereas nifridu is domel charus. That's what I think we have to read in the Rambam. And all this means that the leaves of the lulav have not been severed, according to the Rambam, from the lulav. And now we have to decide, well, is lulav kosher or not? Because the leaves are separated, but not severed. Right? Those are the two words we need. Separated, severed.
in all these cases of the kashra and pasul, we're talking about rove the leaves, or just all the leaves, or one leaf, or what?
That's an excellent question. Let's see. Interesting, the Rambam doesn't tell you.
I think it would be rove.
Pashas, it should be rove. Yeah, I wish the Rambam would have spelled that out. I don't know. Ram doesn't spell it out, but Lechora, it should be Ro. Oh, now David's question is actually a great segue to the second half of our discussion for today of Nechlekat Tiomis, because if David is right that we're talking about Rov Olav, which Olav are we talking about? Remember, we spoke many times that the Luv could be broken up into three parts. There's the basic distinction between the Shidra and the Olam. Then the Olam themselves can be subdivided into two categories. There's the Olam HaElyonim and the Olam HaTachtonim. There's the Rosh HaLulav, which is on top, and then there's the rest of the Lulav, which has Olam, but it's not the Rosh HaLulav. Now, in the case of Nifritzu, which Rashi has here in Chorus as Noshrim, as Olam Noshrim, so the Rama has Nifritzu as Medaldalim, and Rashi has it as Noshrim. So the question is, if we apply Rov, then we're in deep trouble. Because Rav Papa vacillates back and forth about the Tiomis. Now, the Tiomis is the top leaf that comes out of the Shidra and goes all the way to the tippy top. We're talking about Nifritzu, we're talking about Nashru HaOlim, Rashi's definition of Chorus, the Rambam's definition of Chorus, L'chora. So what's the suffix of Rav Papa? Just one second, Rav Papa's asking about Nechlokot. Just one second. Let's take a look at Rashi here. What does Nechlokot Yomis mean? Rashi says Shnei Olam Elyonim Emtzayim Sheshom HaShidra Kol. So we're talking about the very end of the Shidra going from the bottom up, and after the point that it terminates there are still two Olam Elyonim, the two top leaves. They are connected one to the other. The Nechleku Zemis, are the two halves of that leaf, were separated. Now, had Rashi stopped here, I would understand, but Rashi adds something else over here. Rashi says, "V'nistika Shidra ad ha'olim shalamata mehem." Rashi seems to be assuming that there was a very profound split in the Shidra, to the point that the split reaches all the way down to the bottom olim, the olim on a lower level. Now, why does Rashi insist on adding the Shidra into the equation here? The Pashtus is that we have something called a Tiomes. The Tiomes are the Olam Elyonim Emtzayim, and that was Nechlaka, that was split. Who says that the Shidra was split? Unless Rashi's trying to answer a basic question, because let's go back to Rav Huna. We started today with Rav Huna, and Rav Huna says that Nistak is kosher. Meaning, Rashi's stuck with the following problem. How could Rav Papa say, according to one side, that Nechlaka Atiyomis is possible, where Rav Huna himself says that Nistak is kosher? And if you look at Rashi on Nistak, which is on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, three lines up from the top, Rashi says, Nistaku Roshei Ha'olim. Do you notice the word Roshe in plural? It means the top olim of the lulav. Now, included in the top olim of the lulav, by definition, is what? Anybody home?
Tiomis.
Is the Tiomis, correct. The Tiomis is included in Roshe olim. So Rashi's got a real problem over here, because if Nistak Roshe olim, Rashi says, going to Rav Huna, it's kosher. Now you're talking about Nechlaka, which is also split, and you're saying that because it's the Tiomis, It might be possible, says Rav Papa. Why would it be possible if Nistak, according to Rav Huna, is Rashi Ha'olim, even more than the Tiyomis, the split were impacted on the Rashi Elyonim, the top Elyonim, and Rav Huna says, nevertheless, it's kosher. What he means is kosher, you know, sometimes you is there a word to disfigure? Is there a word like that in English? Sometimes you disfigure a luav to the point where it loses its figure. And that's called a balmum. You know, that's not something that's within the realm of creates hadar or kapas tvarim. It doesn't have any hadar whatsoever. But mystica, where it's split, is not such a radical disfigurement of the luav. And if Rashi says that Nistak refers to the Rashi Olim, then by definition he's including even the Tiyonis, which is the head honcho here. That's the tallest of all the Olim. So how can Rav Papa turn around after Rav Huna has already told me that Nistak HaOlim HaElyonim, right, Rashi Olim, it's kosher, and then Rav Papa says, well, if you split that one Tiyonis in the middle, it's going to be possible, or it might be possible. So perhaps that's where Rashi introduced a whole new element into the equation, that what's Nechlaka Tiyomis, Rashi says? Not just the Tiyomis itself, but what? But Nistaka Shidra. In other words, Rav Huna is talking about what? Rashi Ha'olim. No mention of the Shidra. The Shidra is perfectly healthy. But Rav Papa is talking about a case, again, it's a little bit difficult in the language of Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, Nechlaka Tiyomis, he doesn't say anything about the Shidra, but yet Rashi insists that Nistaka Shidra. And Rashi's Nistaka Shidra is a pretty radical change in the Lula, because Rashi says, Ad Ha'olim Shalamata Mehem. It's not just like a little hair's breadth of a split that you can see under a microscope in the Shidra. No, the Shidra is radically split. To the point in which it's already down to the to the Olim Shalamata Mehem. So on the one hand, the good news is that I think Rashi is justified in adding a new element into the variable into the equation, because otherwise we're stuck, because Rashi is committed to the position that according to Rav Huna, a lulav is kosher even though the tiyomis was split. And how do we know this? Because Rashi says that Nistak means Rashi Ha'olim, which certainly includes the Tiyomis, and yet it's kosher. The answer is that Rav Papa wants the Pasul Nechlaka HaTiyomis because it reaches all the way down to what? To the Shidra. And Rashi says Nistaka Shidra. So that's the good news. The not so good news is, I don't know how Rashi fits this into the language of the Gemara. I mean, the Gemara says Nechlaka Tiyomis. It doesn't say any. The Gemara doesn't whisper a word about the Shidra. The Shidra is totally guiltless. So that question I can't answer. So now let's take a look at the Gemara. Right next to it, a Toshma. You see, Rav Papa opens up this question, and the Gemara tries to answer this question. Toshma, the Omer of Yochanan, some have the gear. So, Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, Nitla Tiyomis Pasul. And at this particular point, the Gemara identifies Nitla Tiyomis with Nechlaka Tiyomis. My love, Duha did Nechlaka. There's no difference between the two. The Gemara says, Lo, Nitla Shaini, Da Chaserle. He actually removes the tiyomis, and therefore it's chaser. It's missing a piece. Masha'en kenim Rav Papa, it's only nechlaka tiyomis. Then the Gemara says, Ika diyami, we have another lishna, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, nechlaka tiyomis, nase kemishin nitla tiyomis upasal. That what Rav Yeshua ben Levi meant when he said, nechlaka hatiyomis, I'm sorry, when he says Nitla Tiyomis, he meant to say that Nechlaka Tiyomis is like Nitla HaTiyomis, Upasal. So you get the impression that the Gemara in the Ika Diyami is coming to the final conclusion regarding Rav Papa's Safek, that Nechlaka Tiyomis is what? Is Pasal. Because the Gemara now is establishing an equation in the Ikad D'Amri between Nechlekat Tiyomis and Nitlat Tiyomis. And Rabbi Shub ben Levi is committed to the position that Nitlat Tiyomis is possible. So therefore, ipso facto, Nechlekat Tiyomis is also possible. And even though the Tiyomis still exists, but Nechlekat Tiyomis nasa kemisha Nitlat Tiyomis. Al pidin, it's as if he removed the entire Tiyomis. And therefore, it's possible. Now, in the case of Nitla Tiyomis, for sure, the two Olam Elyonim were removed. I mean, that's what the word Tiyomis means. Tiyomis means those two Olam that are identical, that are attached to each other, and those were removed. In that case, we don't have to introduce the Shidra at all. Is there a Rashi here about Nitla Tiyomis? Just one second. No, I don't see the Rashi on Nitla Tiyomis. But I'm gonna put my reputation here on the line, and I'm gonna tell you that Nitla Tiyomis, according to Rashi, there was no impact whatsoever on the Shidra. I have to prove that to you. But what I'm suggesting is that in order to upgrade Nechlekat Tiyomis to the level of Nitla Tiyomis, which is the Ikar D'Amri, the whole thrust of the Ikar D'Amri is to say that Nechlekat Tiyomis Nase Kemisha Nitla Tiyomis is possible. And Rashi says the only way you could upgrade, so to speak, the psul, you know, intensify the disqualification of Nechlekat Tiyomis to equate it with Nitla Tiyomis, Rashi says you have to add another variable into the equation. That Nechlekat Tiyomis means that what else was affected? The Shidra. Now, it comes out very odd. According to Rashi, in Nechlekat Tiyomis, without impacting on the Shidra, it would be kosher. And that's basically Rav Huna. Rav Huna says Nistak is kosher because it didn't have any impact on the Shidra. So again, split is not possible if it's only in the Olam, even if it's in the Tiyomis. You have to add another element into the equation. Nechlekat Tiyomis means not only is the Tiyomis split, but also the Shidra is split. Now, you get the impression that if the Shidra alone was split, let's say you took a razor and you split part of the Shidra, but you didn't affect the Olam at all, it would be kosher. Now, we have a principle in mathematics that 0 plus 0 equals 0. So what you're telling me here is, if it would have been just a split in the Tiyomis, that itself would be kosher. If it would have just been a split in the Shidra, that itself would be, in and of itself, would be kosher. But somehow when you combine the two, you get this explosion that takes place, and now the lulav is posel, and nasa kemisha nitla hatiyomis. What do you mean nitla hatiyomis? It wasn't nitla hatiyomis, it was only nechlekah. Elo what, Rashi says, it's not the nechlekah of nistak, it's the nechlekah that affected the Shidra, and Nistaka Shidra. But Rashi never says that Nistaka Shidra itself would be a psul. So it's got to be Nechlekat Tiyomis plus Nistaka Shidra. Well, but how do you combine the two? If each one in and of itself is not enough to generate a psul, then why is it that when you add the two together, you get a psul? That's what I can't figure out. All right, Rabosa, we'll stop here. I know we're all impacted by Slichas. I don't know if tomorrow's going to be better or worse. I can't figure it out. I remember this from the yeshiva days. I had a yeshiva in Mavaser Tzion. And once we started Slichas, it was an uphill battle. You really have to dance for the guys and wake them up, you know, maybe blow a shofar. Maybe that would help. I don't know. Anyway, everyone should be Matzliach, and thank you so much.
Thank you.